Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome to Trumpet Radio Live. This is the Tuesday edition. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon with you here today. Lots to talk about on today's show. Baseball can be dangerous. A lot of fun, but it can be dangerous, too. We've got a story about that. There's a school trying a no-homework policy. Got some information about that. Chicago this year, 9 months in, 500 homicides already. Have some details about that. And how do you raise boys in today's society? It's a good question. We'll look at that. All this and more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome to Trumpet Radio Live here on Tuesday. This is the 6th of September, and everyone's back from a three-day weekend and rested, ready to go. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here with you. And Grant, you were telling me that you were hibernating over the weekend, resting up.
Pretty much. That was about all I did. We also went over to a friend's home, and all four of his kids beat me in Wii Mario Kart. So that was embarrassing, too.
A little humility there. It's never a bad thing. So hopefully you guys had a great weekend. Those of you that are listening in the U.S., of course, we have listeners around the world as well, but a little bit of a holiday weekend here in the United States. Lots to talk about on today's program, including some headlines here to start. Grant, you played baseball a fair bit growing up.
Yeah, I played through into high school, actually.
You ever take a pretty serious hit from a ball or a bat?
Yeah, I got hit probably 10 times by a pitch. It's never pleasant.
There was a pretty serious incident in Major League Baseball over the weekend. A player by the name of Matt Shoemaker needed emergency surgery to stop his brain from bleeding. He got hit with a line drive right off the head. It was a scary scene, they say, in Seattle on Sunday afternoon. It turned into an even scarier scene later that night. Shoemaker was hit in the head by a Kyle Seager line drive, and I was diagnosed with a small skull fracture and hematoma, which is where you get bleeding. That's obviously a very serious injury, and the Angels general manager said Monday that further scans showed the bleeding to be increasing, so he had to have emergency surgery. So that can happen. I saw the highlight of that, and he got nailed.
Kyle Seager hits so hard, too, by the way. That guy just clubs it every time. He just takes a massive swing, so that's going to be painful.
Yeah, but you know what's amazing is that for as hard as those guys hit and throw, that there aren't more injuries. There really aren't that many, but sometimes something like this happens, which is pretty amazing. But thankfully, he'll be okay, it appears anyway. So I was interested how many baseball deaths there have been. And, you know, there really haven't been very many. There was a pretty long list, but they didn't die from baseball-related activity. But there have been a few deaths. And if you look at baseball in general, not just major leagues, but in general, there have been a few, but really not that many. 2015, here are the deaths. There was a young man who's 15, was pitching during a game in Minnesota, and he was struck by a batted ball. The youngster was taken to a local hospital, and he died later, got hit in the head. So that's kind of what happens if people have serious injuries. It's usually head contact with a ball or a bat.
And it's pretty much only the pitchers who get impacted like that because they're only 60 feet away from the batter. They're throwing it hard, and so the ball gets hit back at them hard, and there's not really much reaction time. The other thing that sometimes happens is a pitcher will hit a batter in the head,
yep,
somehow get it underneath the helmet and get it, hit him right in the skull. So there are a couple ways, but it's usually really rare. They've had a couple of ideas to prevent that. There's this one hat that they try to give the pitchers that has a lot of padding underneath. Uh-huh. But then it kind of makes the guy look like an egghead. So it doesn't. It's not too stylish, and a lot of pitchers wouldn't prefer it.
Yeah, sometimes the batters, you see them, they really have quite a bit of protection where they'll have their helmet kind of wrap around their face or have a mask, other things to protect themselves. There was a 10-year-old in 2015 that died during a baseball game. Not really baseball-related, though. It was storming, and they had to get off the field, and a tree branch fell in and killed them. So just fluke things happen sometimes. There was a 9-year-old bat boy that was killed in 2015 as well. A bat was swung during practice, and they didn't see him, hit him in the head. And I've seen that happen. It happened in grade school. It didn't kill the guy, but it hit him pretty good, and it gave him a big black eye. And, you know, guys are warming up and swinging the bats, and somebody walks behind him, and bam, there you go.
That's actually a huge problem. It happens in the major leagues, too, where guys just don't look before they take a practice swing, and people are walking around. Guys are doing practice swings in the dugout, and there's no room in there, and yet they're taking a full swing. So
yeah,
just not too wise, and it's pretty dangerous for everyone nearby.
Every little league coach, that's like one of the biggest things, you know, stop swinging the bats around everybody else. Like, usually they'll tell you, you know, if they're talking to somebody and they've got their bats, they'll say, put your bat on the ground, like put the tip of it on the ground. Don't be swinging it around and, you know, different things like that. The other one that died in 2015, not really related to the game itself, a guy, it was a 60-year-old gentleman, he fell off the upper deck at a Turner Field and died. So,
in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that happened. So of all the deaths that occur in baseball, most of them are not baseball-related, like as far as the game is concerned.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of those types of injuries, I've heard of those happening where someone gets really drunk at a game and then just falls off the upper deck and dies. I think something like that happened in Texas a few years ago. It also happened at one of the Buffalo Bills games not too long ago either.
Well, you know, going to like Thunder games here in Oklahoma City, you know, you can get pretty close to the edge there depending on where you're sitting, and they, like, you know, shoot up the T-shirts, and you always, sometimes people lean a little bit, and you think, hang on, don't go too far.
It's not worth it.
It's a nice T-shirt, but you don't need to fall off the upper deck for it. Actually, most of the injuries that happen in baseball games are for the fans sitting there and taking a line drive off of, you know, if they're sitting down one of the baselines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of them, they don't really pay too much attention, which is crazy when you think of a ball coming over 100 miles an hour right at you. Some guys lose their grip on the bat and throw their bat right into the stands.
Yeah.
And the only people who are protected are the people pretty much right behind home plate by that net. Everyone who goes further down the line in their seats can be hit by something.
There was a guy a few years ago that got hit by part of a broken bat. The bat broke and went up and hit him. He was okay. I mean, he had a cut. But he was all right. But then there's always a guy that's a hero, you know, where the ball's rocketed down the line and he catches it one-handed, doesn't spill his beer, and saves a kid.
Catches it in his beer.
You're going to make ESPN if you do that. So that happens sometimes too. So it's amazing, really, that you don't see more injuries. But really, you don't see too many from all the hard hits. There's just not too many. So that's a good thing. But this guy, Matt Shoemaker, needed some surgery. So if you want to see the video, it's out there. He got hit pretty good on the head. It's fascinating. It's one of those where I usually don't like injury videos, but this one isn't quite as bad because it's not like a leg going the wrong way or something like that.
You don't see a contorted limb, which is it's a little bit less gruesome to see someone get hit in the head.
Yeah, it's just a quick pop. But
wow, he did fracture his skull.
Yeah. So and the other thing that happens too, one of the injuries from a couple years ago was people running into each other for chasing down a pop fly.
Mm-hmm.
And that even happened here at on our campus. Some of the grade school kids ran into each other.
That's right.
Got hurt a little bit. It wasn't terrible, but it was, you know, you got to watch out. That's why they say call it.
They do. Yeah, exactly. And I think the problem in some of these big stadiums is that it's so loud there, especially if you're the visiting team and the crowd starts to yell louder as the ball gets closer to you and you're going to catch it, then you can't hear if your teammate's calling you off or not. And so you just both keep going for it. Your eyes in the air, so you're not looking at your teammate who you're about to run into.
That can be a bad deal. So interesting story from over the weekend. Here's another story from Fox News. There's this school getting back into session. They're trying a no homework policy to try to help underperformance. Now, there's probably a lot of opinion about whether that would work or not. But it's not quite as good as it sounds for the kids because they're making them go to school longer. So they're saying, we won't send homework home with you, but we're going to keep you here an extra, I think it's an hour or two.
Mm.
So they're trying to do everything in school, but they're making the day longer, hoping that it will, you know, improve their test scores and improve their performance.
That's fair enough. It's easy to, after a long day of school, procrastinate and take way too long on some sort of assignment. If you're there the whole day and you have to get it all done before you leave, at least that way your homework is all contained in one area.
Yeah, I really liked it. When I was in grade school, we kind of did it that way. We didn't have necessarily a longer day, but we would go over something in class, and then work on it right away, and then you try to get your homework done, which I liked, and I thought that was helpful. It helped me remember it better, and it was nice to be able to go home and just say, like, that's it. You know, I'm done for the day. I can go home and play or, you know, whatever else I'm going to do that day. I don't have to think about all this extra homework. So it is an interesting theory. I think, of course, taking homework home also teaches certain responsibility and time management. So I think there's probably a balance there both ways. But the school's going to try it out, and they hope that it will improve their performance. So it'll be interesting to see. It's going to be an 8-hour day, though. So it'll be an extra 2 hours for some of the kids, wow, depending on their ages. So if they can keep their attention for 8 hours, good luck to them.
Yeah, hopefully they can. It might be a disadvantage for the kids who have been slaving away and working really hard to get all their homework done. They're the hardworking, disciplined ones, and now it's just kind of leveling the playing field and making it easier for the more lazy kids to get the same grade.
Yeah, and that's what they kind of said about this one particular school. It's in Western Massachusetts, and they said that those that do well do really well, and they are going home and they're doing the work, but there's a lot that don't. And so they're trying to find some kind of a thing here to help them. And I think probably in a lot of cases, if you look at especially the younger grades, I would guess a lot of it gets back to the parents. If the kids go home and their parents are like, okay, now homework time, then they probably do okay. If they go home and they don't have parents at home or they're not paying attention, I would see it being more of a problem. Because it's hard for a 8, 9, 10-year-old to have enough responsibility to do. They forget.
They do.
They want to do something else. Even when I'm on my son, you know, to say, hey, are you done with your homework? Yep. And then I follow up, oh, except for those, you know, two other things I forgot about. So that happens.
Yeah, it happens all the time. And I teach a little Bible class for the third and fourth graders here. And every single day they come into class and they say, oh, I forgot my Bible. Can I go back out to my locker and grab that? And, oh, I forgot to bring home or bring back the scripture memory. And I forgot to have my parents sign this. Is it okay if I bring it the next day? And It's just cute, but hopefully they get through that as they get older.
Got to get a little more responsibility there. Yeah, that's for sure. One of the things that really helped me as a kid was that having to ride the school bus. Like, if I didn't have it, I wasn't going to get it that day. So that did help me remember, what do I need to do this day? I would always set out my things that I needed the night before. I need to take this, this, and this. And I still do that as an adult, so those habits stick with you.
That's a really smart idea, especially if something happens unforeseen in the morning and you're running late. At least all of the things you need are in one place. That's something that kids can be taught to do from a very young age.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see if this works at this school. They're always trying new ways to get the kids to do better, which I guess is good, but I think it probably gets back to parenting and home life, and it's hard to manufacture that if you don't have it. This is a headline from CNN. It's like their top story today. 500 homicides, 9 months, one American city, Chicago. They've had 500 homicides in 9 months. They're on track to have the most deadly, the deadliest year in, I think, a decade. So bad news in Chicago.
Yeah, it's almost like the Wild West, where you could just challenge anyone on the street to a duel. People are just killing each other everywhere.
Yeah, they're on pace. I mean, if it keeps going, I think it'll be somewhere around 670, 72, something like that for the year. And it's pretty amazing if you think about just how many that is. And then you think about, you know, war zones. But, you know, the thing is, Chicago is not the homicide capital of the United States. New Orleans, St. Louis, Detroit, Baltimore, and Newark, New Jersey all have higher rates when you drill down the data per capita. So there's so many people living in Chicago. I think it's 2.73 million or somewhere in there.
Wow.
So 500 is a lot, but they have a lot of people. But these other places per capita have even more. So a pretty violent culture in the U.S. in some of these cities.
Yeah, and that's where all the highest murder rates are in the big cities, where people are crowded together, and it makes crime more possible because there's literally targets everywhere.
A lot of gang activity, a lot of problems there that would lead to violence, and so it's interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see if the presidential candidates talk much about it. They're kind of dealing with their own personal, attacks against them, trying to ward those off, or their own failings individually that people are trying to get into. But we haven't had a lot of talk, at least that I've heard, about the actual topics. Like, how are you going to solve this?
Yeah, please, can we get into a substantive conversation at some point, a real debate about the actual issues, instead of trying to think of the best name to call the other person. I mean, that's an issue in this country that affects millions of people, that violence in the cities, gangs, you know, even drug wars, things like that, illegal immigration. And we're not even hearing much about any of these issues.
And I think one of the other things that's happening here in Chicago is, well, there is a lot of people leaving the city. They're getting out, especially people that were the business owners. And that's hurting them, too, financially. And I would think part of the reason they're leaving is because of this. I'm sure there's a variety of reasons. But if it's this violent, people that can get out probably will. And so you're seeing a flight of some of the more quality individuals, the people that are providing jobs, they're leaving Chicago. And so it's more than just 500 people killed. It's all the people that are leaving and the business are taking with them, too.
I saw a headline the other day about a family that moved to Chicago and then after one day saw, oh, it's so violent, we're going to get out of here, and they left after one day.
Wow. One day. Wow. Well, that's
so I don't know where they moved in the city, probably one of the worst areas, but it just shows you how dangerous it is, and any time you could be a victim.
Yeah. I've spent some time in Chicago, and there is, of course, the suburbs. There are some nicer suburbs that aren't right in the city there, and you can probably, you know, avoid some problems. But I do remember taking some trips into the city and seeing just a lot of homeless, and people would tell you, the locals, well, don't go down this street, don't go down that street. But if you stay here, you're probably okay. But some people, they just can't move. I'm sure a lot of people would love to get out of there, but they can't. There's nowhere to go. And so these homicides keep happening there in Chicago. It's not a good situation there, or New Orleans or St. Louis or Detroit or Baltimore, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, the attack on police doesn't help anything either. So that's one thing, you know, like, say, even on the news reporting here on KPCG today about Colin Kaepernick, and the president kind of really supported him in a lot of ways. And he's complaining about police. Well, where's his protest over the homicides?
Yeah, that's right. That's just such a double standard to say that, oh, a few dozen have been killed by police, when there are hundreds and thousands who are being killed by each other all the time. The president took that typical stance of maybe, oh, he shouldn't have protested the flag. He could have done it in a different way, but he does have a constitutional right to protest. Since when do you care about the constitutional rights? Well, you don't talk much about the Constitution until it backs the liberal side.
Yeah, and the other thing was he said, well, he's at least bringing up a conversation that should be had, even if he's not bringing it up in the best way. But that just gives legitimacy to it. That's the typical thing we've heard, yeah, that, well, it's a legitimate argument. Maybe just bring it up in a different way. When the truth of it is, really, it's not a legitimate argument.
Not at all. And the thing is, people are having to even preface their defense of the police by saying, yes, there are some racist police. We're already having to concede that part of it. I mean, I guess I would like to see some proof of specific racist policemen before we even have to concede that much, because sometimes they just have to kill the people who are immediate threats. Doesn't mean they're racist.
Right. They're dealing with this situation in Chicago where people are killing each other, 500 homicides. Those are only the ones that died. And a lot more being shot that aren't dying immediately. Pretty sad situation there. This interesting little write-up from the Gateway Pundit. Illegal immigrants tell border agents Obama said it was okay to come. So they're getting caught, and that's what they're saying. Well, he told us we could come.
Right.
It says a reporter, Dan Plante, spent the day on the border and came back with a stunning report that first aired on August 17th. Dan says 9 out of 10 illegals are released back on the streets of San Diego, where the report was being done. 90% catch and release. That's not a good thing.
How?
I feel bad. What if you were that 1 out of 10 that had to be kept? I'd be like, come on.
Look at all these guys.
Yeah, there's 9 other ways. Then I'm the guy that has to stay. That's like when you're driving down the road and everyone's going 5 over the speed limit and you get pulled over. And
right.
You're like, what about everyone else?
The phrase, oh, I was just keeping up with traffic.
Right. I was told I could go this fast. This reporter told viewers, even if thousands of agents were hired and every illegal was captured, the policy from the top is letting them go as fast as they are caught. So can you imagine that? That's your job, you know, to catch illegals and then they're immediately released 9 out of 10 times. You're like, what am I doing here?
Why release them back into the country if their crime is being here illegally? So your punishment is that we're going to let you keep being here illegally. That's right. What happens after we capture you. That is why people think they can just keep coming in. There's literally no punishment for most of them. They just get released and continue on their merry way.
Right. And if you're one of those ones that doesn't get released back into the streets, well, you just try it again, I'm sure. And then next time you'll fit into that number. Chris Harris from the National Border Patrol Council told the reporter that when we ask people why they are coming here, the answer is invariably the same. And it's not the president. They actually say Obama said it was okay to come. So there's a belief that they will remain, and the belief is true. Pretty specific evidence there that there's a real problem with immigration.
Isn't coming here illegally a crime? For any other crime, you at least get detained for a while until you have your trial. These people are just getting released right away. There should be a punishment of having to stay in some sort of center on the border and, you know, waste a few weeks or months in there because you tried to break the law. That should be a common sense way to deal with these things instead of saying, oh, well, 5 minutes later, here you go.
Yeah.
Continue on into the country.
Yeah, it's a bad situation there. And so we'll see what happens with that. I'm sure that will be a topic that comes up during the debates. And of course, I can already hear what's going to be said. I think there'll be accusations of racism and so forth. But there is a problem that needs to be dealt with. And people are experiencing it. They're seeing it. It's affecting them, their neighborhoods. And so no matter what the government says, people are seeing the impact of the illegal immigration, you know, in their very own neighborhoods.
Yeah, it's a discussion that needs to be had. But the problem is, like you said, it's probably just going to devolve into racist accusations. And that's just amazing because there are hardly any racists in this country today, and especially not ones who are going to gain widespread approval. There wouldn't be tons of minorities supporting both sides if they were actual racists. I mean, some of their policies may be disadvantageous to some minorities, but that doesn't mean that, oh, I hate all these races.
Right. We're talking about legalities.
Yeah.
And there are laws that are in place to make sure immigration happens legally and lawfully, and this is just being overrun. So pretty interesting there. and they are getting the message that when they come across, why are you coming across? Well, he said we could come. The president said we could and stay. So where are they getting that from? Even if that's not exactly what's been said verbatim,
mm-hmm.
They're getting the point. They know how it's going.
And this is another one of those cases where the people on the ground, the citizens in Arizona and Texas, are just sick of seeing all these people come in illegally. Those are very conservative states that say we need to have that wall in general. That's what a lot of people there are saying. So they're suffering from it. A lot of those people are losing their jobs to people who come in and undercut their prices, basically, for labor. So a lot of people are suffering from it, and yet we just keep letting them come in.
Yeah. Not a solution in sight yet. A couple of stories here from our favorite, of course, this happened segment. Stories that just boggle the mind, but then you have to just say, well, sure, of course that happened. In Florida, a woman thought that she set her ex's car on fire, but it wasn't his. And this is kind of a two-layer story. It's hard to believe that it happened, but then the media reported it wrong, which is also funny. So we've got the story, and then we've got what actually happened. And it was corrected in the comments section by people that are like, well, actually, no, this is what happened.
Wow.
So what they reported was this Florida woman thought she was getting revenge on her ex-boyfriend by setting his car on fire, of course. But there was just one little problem with her plan. The car wasn't his. She's a 19-year-old woman. She was captured on surveillance video before and after she set the Honda Accord's trunk ablaze on August the 27th, and then she rode away on her bicycle. So
you have a car and I don't. I'm angry.
So she told police that she thought the now charred car was owned by her former boyfriend, but it wasn't. It was just some random guy, and his roommate ran upstairs and said, "Your car's on fire." And he ran down there, and sure enough, it was completely engulfed, and they threw some water on it from a pot, and it had no effect. The car burned completely.
Nice try.
But and what are you going to do? You know, throw some water on it. It didn't help. And you're thinking, how did my car start on fire? Oh, that woman on the bicycle, she did it. So that's the story reported here by the AOL. But then the comment says this. Look, I live in Clearwater. This has been all over the news the last few days. Here's what really happened. The boyfriend broke up with her. So to get revenge, she wanted to smash his windows. She thought that was his car. So she broke the windshield. But in the process, she cut herself and got her blood on the windshield. Then she thought, well, they'll track me off my blood. So she panicked and set the car on fire. That's the full story.
Wow.
Of what, of course, that happened there in Florida.
She still got caught?
She got caught, but sadly, the real owner of the car does not have insurance for vandalism.
Oh, man.
And she's been caught and charged with a second-degree arson. So, you know, people can mistake cars. Years ago when I lived in an apartment, the people that live below me like to have parties all the time. Every Thursday night they had a party for some reason. And I went out to my car the next morning one day, and there was a note on my car from a guy that was at that party. And he thought my car was a car of a girl he liked. And so he confessed all of his feelings for
her.
And it was one of those notes that was like, if you don't respond, that's it, I won't. You know, I won't bother you again type of thing. And I'm like, sorry, dude. This isn't her.
She's not going to respond.
She's not going to respond. So I had the awkward note from the guy. But at least my car wasn't burned.
At least. Yeah. And that girl didn't have enough a fast enough escape vehicle just trying to get away on the bicycle.
On the bike. Yeah. So maybe she'll have to give him his bike or her bike now. I don't know. Just a terrible story. But, you know, can you imagine you're sitting in your apartment there and your roommate runs up and is like, your car's on fire.
That's the absolute worst.
You'd think, like, what happened? Like, did it just spontaneously combust or did something go wrong? You know, the gas? What happened? But, nah, a girl set it on fire.
It must not have been that close either for her to not even recognize her own boyfriend's car.
That's possible. Or, you know, like an Accord's a very common car, so maybe, you know, there just happened to be a couple of them around. Who knows what happened there?
Yeah.
This is unrelated, but it reminds me of a seeing something and thinking it's something that it's not. This happens to little kids all the time. It happened to my daughter over the weekend. We were in a store, and she saw a tall man walk by, and she ran up and grabbed his leg. And I was standing about 10 feet away, and I'm like, that's not your dad. I'm your dad. And the guy, he and his wife are very nice. They're like, oh, we have no problem. We'll take her. I said, now that's okay. So kids do that sometimes. They just run and grab a leg, and they don't realize it's, that's not your parent.
She had wandering eyes.
She took off the wrong way. So I had to tell her, that wasn't your dad. So in a similar way, this girl needed to be told, that's not your ex-boyfriend's car. Be careful. One more story here from the Of Course This Happened segment. Of course, Barack Obama and Vladimir Putin met over the weekend for the G20. There was a death stare between Obama and Putin, and so it sparked a Photoshop battle. You know how sometimes they'll take a still image and then they Photoshop it to make it look like something's happening that's not. Well, the Photoshop battle ensued, and they have some of their favorite ones at the Huffington Post you can look at. Of course, the lasers coming out of the eyes.
Yes, definitely.
They have them together on a beach. they have them in a boxing mat, you know, like a boxing stare down. There's a whole bunch of them. That's what people spend their time on these days. And so whenever people meet, they want to make funny videos. Or not videos, but pictures. And so they've done this, so you can find those at Huffington Post. The death stare between Obama and Putin sparks Photoshop battle. So that's what's happening. You know, they used to do political cartoons years ago where they make fun of things, and now it's like Photoshop battles.
Oh, there's still some pretty good political cartoons as well. There's there's one that has a picture of Hillary Clinton, and all over her skin there are these different crimes. And then the media is holding up a sign that conveniently covers her from being completely naked.
Oh.
And it says, Trump says mean things. So it's like trying to hide all of her tattoos that incriminate her.
Right. Yeah. Well, that is pretty clever. So there are some funny ones out there that you can see. So you can look at this one at the Huffington Post if you want to. People do some pretty funny stuff like that. There was even one over the weekend where this college football player made a pretty fantastic diving catch with one hand. And so they took him and they Photoshopped him onto the parallel bars at the Olympics. So the lady gymnast was doing something, and then he was doing it with his other hand on the lower bar. So If you got some free time and you don't know what to do today, you can check out some of those. Pretty interesting. But they had the death stare there. So Obama and Putin not getting along.
Is that like a resume application or something? These are my Photoshop skills.
I don't know. You could probably, if you were really good at it, you could probably make money just on doing those. If you got some notoriety at, making a site that just took things and kind of did that, I bet you could make a little money.
That's true.
Hard to say. Kia David program's coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. Make sure you listen for that. Two programs every day that we air. And then you can find those videos online also at thetrumpet.com as well. New programs on Friday and some repeats throughout the week. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England today. He talked a little bit about the German-led EU and how they are releasing more information about their military plans. They've had some plans in the works. Talking about developing a military force that can operate independently of NATO. Anyone else think that's a bad idea?
It seems like a pretty bad idea. It conveniently gets America out of the picture. Yeah. And any nation that doesn't want to fall under German control, pretty much.
And, of course, they kept this plan sort of hidden, I guess. They weren't going to release it until after the Brexit vote because they didn't think the Britain would like it or the UK would like it. But they thought the UK would stay. And as Stephen Fleury points out, they left, of course, as we all know. And so now they've released it. Well, this is what we're planning on doing. And trying to get that EU to be pretty united there economically, certainly, socially, and militarily. And then, of course, Angela Merkel is kind of on the outs as far as people's opinion because of the immigration problems there. So you've got the current government kind of on the outs. They're looking for stronger leadership, and they're looking for a stronger unified military. If anyone's paid attention to what Herbert Armstrong wrote over the years, that might ring some bells.
Yeah, it has a devastating outlook for the future, because that's what's always happened, just a unified Europe, and they knew that Britain would never stand for it, so they had to wait until Britain was out of the way. Now we can really see that speed up.
Yep, so a really good program today. Make sure you listen for that here on KPCG. If you can't catch it live, you can always download the archive version there at kpcg.fm, and you can find all the programming there as well. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to take a look at this really interesting write-up about trying to raise boys in this society. We'll do that right after this on Trumpet Radio Live.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live. Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG is produced by the Philadelphia Church of God. The Philadelphia Church of God also supports Herbert W. Armstrong College. Herbert W. Armstrong College is a liberal arts institution in North Edmond, Oklahoma. Herbert W. Armstrong College students, graduates, and faculty members operate KPCG from the college's campus, located near the intersection of Bryant and Waterloo Road. More information about Herbert W. Armstrong College is available at hwacollege.org.
Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live today here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at the trumpet.com as well. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And email, you can send us emails, comments, questions, or concerns to comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today. Before we get to your main story there, Grant, you ever drink coffee? You're a coffee guy?
I drink it every few weeks, pretty much. It's something I really enjoy, but I've never gotten into it consistently.
Well, some people really like their coffee, of course, and sometimes people feel like they need a little more of a kick. So we've got something for you here. This is something in Australia. We have a lot of listeners down under, online at kpcg.fm. Coffee with dangerously high caffeine content may keep you up for 18 hours. They say this cup of coffee will last you all morning and afternoon. And night. Not all night. There's 6 hours in there. You can sleep. A barista in Australia has created a coffee combination so potent that it promises as much as 18 hours of uptime. It also packs in half the amount of caffeine considered to be legally safe to consume in the country of Australia. They say it's a real upper down under. So they're taking some liberty with their words there. I can't tell you what the name of the coffee is because it's an inappropriate title.
Oh, too bad.
But
they would do that, huh?
They would. But anyway, it's something that'll give you a good kick. We'll put it that way. it's created here down there in Australia, as we mentioned. And what's in it? Well, the brew contains a quad shot. That's four shots in one of espresso. Four ice cubes made from 48-hour cold drip and 120 milliliters of extra aged 10-day cold brew. Plus, the barista adds four 48-hour cold brew ice cubes for an extra kick. That's a lot of caffeine. For comparison purposes, a regular cup of Joe contains around 100 to 200 milligrams of caffeine, while a single shot of espresso has around 60 milligrams. But this coffee will likely do exactly what its title suggests. It has 5 grams of caffeine and is about 80 times stronger than a shot of espresso. So if you go to, say, a Starbucks or something and you get a venti latte, or a grande latte, I guess, they usually put 2 shots of espresso in there. This is 80 times stronger than 1 shot of espresso.
Wow. I one time when I was younger, I went to Starbucks and a couple friends said that I should try out their 8-pack of double shot espressos. So I drank them all and was awake twitching the whole night. And this apparently sounds a lot stronger than that. So maybe it's not something we would want to try. If you're in the special forces or something, though, and you have to be awake for a long time, that could be just what you need.
Maybe so. Scientists say 10 grams of caffeine can lead to death.
Whew.
So this isn't that far away from that. According to the advertiser, the beverage should be consumed over time, they say. They also make a large version of the drink in case you need something a little bigger. The super strong brew does come with a medical warning advising those with a heart condition or high blood pressure to steer clear. They say some people love the drink, while others are broken by it.
Make sure you don't forget later in the day and have another one.
Oh, man.
You will die.
How is that for an advertising campaign? You might love it, or it might break you.
How tough are you, though?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Not tough enough. That's my answer right there. Wow. I like coffee, but that's next level. That's next level. Wow. So anyway, interesting.
That sounds like the next thing I need to try.
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah, you may not come back from that one. You'd be talking. People will think the radio is on like 4 times speed. You'd be talking so fast. No, don't worry. It's just the coffee.
I'll do it at the beginning of the weekend, so hopefully it wears off by the end, by the next time we go on the air.
Yeah, there's that expression, right, where people say it's the liquor talking. Well, it's just the caffeine talking.
Got me on turbo speed.
Wow, we could get through a lot of content.
That's for sure.
And then die immediately afterwards. this is an interesting write-up you've got, especially for parents out there or people that would like to be parents. It says, it's not just parents of girls who should be worried about equality. This lady writes, I am a besotted mother of 2 small men in training, and I have a mother of an issue. This writer is also from Australia, by the way.
Yeah.
So what does she have to say?
Yeah, that's another thing. This is from an Australian news source, and they do use some slang in this article, so I don't know if I would necessarily recommend it either, but it is really funny and well written. It talks about how she's raising a couple of young boys and she's teaching them how to be gentlemen and respectful of women, but she just doesn't know how her children are going to grow up and coexist with some of these women in society today because of the rise of feminism.
Yeah, it's really an interesting topic to think about because there is sort of this idea, and I saw one of her little paragraphs in there where she was talking about how there is this kind of this society-wide thought that, you know, girls are just nice, everything's nice, but guys are really bad, like, you know, boys and girls. And it's a bad way to grow up, thinking and having people treat you like you're bad. Even though there are some differences in the genders that need to be praised because they're there for good reasons.
She actually wrote a phrase about that, saying that society believes little girls are sugar and spice and boys are a sweaty mess of snips and snails and puppy dogs' tails. So it just makes out the girls to be perfect and well-behaved and the boys to be, a lot of the time, just buffoons. It talks about how in advertising, men are fair game. They're always lampooned by marketers. Says that all men are portrayed as clueless fathers, inept lovers, junk food addicts, and insensitive cavemen. And on TV, it says that men are crushed regularly by any female presenter, lusting after the last word in a debate, a joke, anything. So the girl always gets the last word, always has a chance to make the guy look bad before the segment ends.
Yeah, those guys that go on those interviews, I feel bad for them because they're in a no-win situation. Because if they disagree at all with the viewpoint of the female on the panel, they're immediately considered to be sexist. Like, they have to defend themselves immediately. And we see the same thing with, say, the racial issues. You know, you can't disagree with a minority because you're immediately racist. It's just an unfair scale. And what it does is it just buries truth. Like, you can't have a good discussion with, say, somebody that's a radicalized feminist because they're not going to hear anything. They're not looking for answers. They're looking to prove that you have a problem.
Right. You'll never get into the topic of conversation because the whole thing is turned on, well, you're a bigot of some kind, defend yourself the entire time, and we'll never even discuss the thing that you're probably right about, but I don't want to acknowledge. That's what happens on a lot of these TV shows. It just totally misdirects people's attention to something less important. It says that she was gobsmacked when a visiting feminist writer on a popular panel show justified her gender politics when she spat, "Men should just get over themselves." Then she writes, "What would happen if a man had uttered those same words about women? Outrage, looting, Twitter meltdown."
Oh, absolutely. And I've thought that, and I think a lot of people have, where you read something, and if it was said by the opposite side, people would just be outraged, like you say. But because this fits into the narrative of, you know, all things feminine being good and all things masculine being bad, they can just talk this way. And people won't argue because as soon as you argue about it, you are automatically a sexist.
There are several alarming trends today. So one of them is to make the two genders exactly the same, where neither one has these strong characteristics. And then this other one, feminism, which kind of runs contrary to that, but also goes right in line with it, says that feminine traits are all good and masculine traits are all bad. And the women are clearly the better species, maybe.
Right.
And this woman talks about what will the world be like when my boys get old enough and they're living out there in the real world as men. She talks about how, you know, will they be surrounded by women who scorn femininity in favor of their, I don't know how to say that, stuck on repeat. there's a lot of things I shouldn't say on air here. But are there women who will get all worked up when a man compliments their hair? Will boys be allowed to show chivalry without running into a hothead feminist who says she can open the door for herself? So will they have to live in masculinity in fear, or can they actually be real men?
Well, it's so fascinating to think about that because as you're raising boys, which I have a son, you know, if you send them out into the world, they are going to face these types of situations, impossible situations, really. And it's so funny, though, because you see the result today in society already. You see a large segment of guys that don't want to work, don't want to be married, don't want to raise a family. They just are very selfish because they've been taught that, you know, look, you can't get involved with being a gentleman because it just gets or taking on typical male responsibility because then you're considered the sexist. So people are just kind of going into themselves a bit, becoming selfish, and then you have all these women that are like, where are the real men at?
Right.
Well, yeah, we know where they are. They were never raised in some cases because of the societal pressure put on them and their parents.
There's a message out there that says women don't need men to support them, and not only that, a lot of the time they don't even want men. So a lot of men are actually saying, well, what's the point? I'll live a separate life. I'll turn to other avenues in life, other forms of enjoyment and entertainment instead of a courtship with a woman, because at any turn something could go wrong. And if we ever do get divorced, the woman automatically takes half of everything I own and probably gets custody of the kids. There are a lot of issues that are slanted toward women. Another thing is in the workplace. That's what this author here brings out, how a lot of businesses are rushing to look like they're so gender or diversity inclusive that they just hire more women than they should. Regardless of actual capabilities, they just hire more women, which is a disadvantage for a lot of men who may be more qualified but don't fit into the diversity push.
Yeah, really interesting. There, you know, you almost have to step back and tell the young guys, like, you know, it's okay to be a guy. It's okay to be a man. That's not a bad thing. But it is made out in a lot of ways to be a bad thing. Like, it's inherently bad. And that's not the case at all. And so even on the Trump Daily Radio show today, Stephen Fleury talks about some more about women and the roles of women. He talked about the roles of men earlier. And that's something that is just not liked by a lot of people in society. But the Bible lays out very specific roles for everybody, and they're all good. They're both really good. Nothing bad there. Very good.
Yeah, and neither one is inferior. Both sides just have their own roles. Mm-hmm. People like to say that the way women stayed in the home and raised children in the past is so offensive and demeaning, when really they're raising the next generation of leaders. They're building an environment of success for the next generation to grow up in. Nothing insulting or demeaning about that to me.
No, I mean, think about the great leaders of history. Think about great kings and so forth. And you could ask their mom, well, what did you do? Well, I just raised the king. Oh, was that all? That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, exactly.
Not many people can say that.
How is that offensive now, that is what is being rejected large scale today? I mean, even Mr. Stephen Fleury played on his show, I believe last week at one point, that clip from Fox News a couple of years ago where a couple of men were saying, look, you know, marriages are having a harder time succeeding because both the man and the woman are working outside the home. It was actually a lot more successful when the woman was in the home and the man was working. But you can't say that today. These Fox News female anchors were so offended by that. And they're spot on in a lot of their views. But when it comes to the woman staying at home, it's as if we're suggesting a type of slavery. And that's not at all what it is.
Well, it's funny because even when you bring up like that topic and I heard the clips, and when those guys started talking about it, I almost start to recoil a little bit, like, oh, you can't say that. Because you know there's going to be a firestorm. Mm-hmm. And you can't, no matter what you say, no matter what the stats are, no matter where you go for authority on that, it's ridiculed. And where do you go for authority on that? I mean, the only place you can really, really go and say, this is what the authority is the Bible. And then, of course, people are up in arms about that. But if people claim to be Christians, well, what's the Bible for then? If you're not going to use it, what's the point?
Yeah, why listen to anything if you're not going to listen to certain parts? That's the question that needs to be asked. Why do we only listen to this part of the Bible, but not the rest of it? There is a little bit of good news, though, because only fewer than 20% of women actually identify as feminists. There are obviously more who believe that they should be able to work outside the home just fine, and they can. But, you know, there are women out there who still appreciate manly men. So all hope is not lost.
Yeah, and it is a real challenge for mothers and fathers raising young men, because a lot of institutions out there are pretty much set up to benefit girls. A lot of times schools are, and which is good for the girls, but it's not good for the guys.
Yeah.
So there needs to be some balancing out there. But it's an interesting write-up, and it's good to see some of the perspective there from a mom raising a young man. It's not just parents of girls who should be worried about equality, and that's a write-up there. You know, it's interesting, too. I was just over the weekend, we did some errands, and we stopped at a shopping mall, and you see all walks of life at the shopping mall. You can, years ago, people used to window shop a lot, just kind of look at the windows. Now you just look at the people.
Right.
Just watch the people walk by and think, wow, what's happening here? And there were quite a few that were clearly into some sort of different lifestyle and weren't into the normal roles of the genders. And I'll tell you what, they didn't look like happy people.
Right.
They looked, you know, I'm not going to pass some sort of judgment on somebody by one quick look, but you know, you can get a sense of somebody like, oh, they seem pretty happy this moment, or they seem pretty angry, and there was some pretty angry expressions. Mm-hmm. So you'd think people would be happy, right? That's what they're after, happiness, but yet people don't appear to be happy.
Well, yeah, a lot of those alternative lifestyles are just widely advertised today. I've seen a few advertisements recently where it's like the man's at home all day and he's changing the diapers of the three kids and he's dealing with all these messes. And then the woman comes home from work and they make it seem like they're the most happy people out there when that never even existed until the last, what, few decades. Were people so miserable before that when the divorce rate was way lower and when you know, marriages lasted an entire lifetime and kids grew up happy and well adjusted.
You know, what's so funny about that is that, like you say, that's kind of the idealized feminist dream, right? The woman's work and the man's at home. But if you really stop and think about what would be asked here, if you went into a group of ladies and said, I demand that you go work and earn money and I shall stay home and you bring me money. Wouldn't that be like the most sexist thing ever? Like, wouldn't they be like outraged by that? Like, yeah. I'm going to do nothing. You get out there and earn some money. That doesn't seem very, very nice.
I know. Maybe it all depends on how you say it. If you say it in a more pleasant way, they'll think the exact same thing is desirable. But yeah, why not enjoy the children? Women are naturally more nurturing. They do a better job of raising the children. It's not that they're less capable out in the workforce, which, I mean, I think men are naturally more comfortable with that more stressful environment, but women do a better job of being with the kids all the time. They're better at that. They're not worse at something that makes them have to stay home. They're actually better at being home.
That yesterday I was talking about Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, and he was going through three things that make a very successful company. And one of his points was you need to develop a team of people that have strengths that you don't have, and you can be very successful. Well, that almost seems like that could work in a family too.
Right.
Different strengths.
Yeah, play to the strengths.
Play to the strengths. You have different strengths. Fulfill those strengths, which are usually a bit of a weakness for the other side. And then together you have a pretty solid unit. That seems like pretty good business sense right there.
Mr. Armstrong talked about fitting the square peg in a round hole, and that might fit with a man and his career choices, but it also fit with a woman going outside the home when she doesn't have to and trying to force her way into some career field. Why do that when you have kids who depend on you and really thrive under you? Women are better at men at staying home. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're worse at anything else.
Right. It's a strength, a particular strength that they have. So pretty interesting right up there, and just a changing societal times, and the results have not been great. Quick little note here for those of you that buy groceries, which I think is every human being. There's five things that are supposedly getting cheaper a little bit for a while that you can pick up at the store. Beef and veal, they say. Prices are down 7.7%, but they're going to go up 2 to 3% next year. So get your beef now. Poultry price compared to 2015, it's down 3.4%, a little bit cheaper. And they say it's going to go up. Everything's going up, by the way. So jump on board now with some of that stuff. Dairy is down just a touch as well compared to last year. Eggs also down a little bit. And but all those prices are heading north. So if you want to go out and get some of that stuff, apparently it's a little bit cheaper. Although I didn't think anything was cheaper, but they're saying this stuff is a little bit.
Yeah, the preppers can now go out and prepare. They have more motivation to go out and prepare for the apocalypse.
Yeah, go get your beef and veal now. Save up for worse times ahead. Some of the things that are going on today in the world. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program coming up here in just a bit on KPCG. Also, you can listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury, talking about what's going on over there in Germany. There's a lot happening in Germany and in Europe. And you can hear more about that on today's Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And also, as a reminder, stop and check out the trumpet.com. That's got some of the main stories of the day. The radio programs are there as well, some videos also, and one more website to mention, the pcog.org website. And a lot of good articles there. Grant, you do some work there as well.
That's right. Yeah, write a few news stories and different sports lessons.
Lessons of life. Life lessons.
Yeah.
You can do one now on the baseball guy that got hit in the head.
Yeah, I could.
Fine. I'm sure there's a lesson there.
Actually,
somewhere.
Yeah. The next one I was going to do is about a player who worked for years and then got hit in the head in his first MLB at bat.
Oh, really?
And never played in the majors again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I had no idea.
So there you go. You nailed it. It's like you read my mind.
It totally worked out there. But yeah, you can get some of those articles at pcog.org, a little bit of a different flavor on some of those, more Christian living, and the atrava.com, of course, a little more news prophecy related. So good websites to check out and visit every day. There's always new content there for you. Thanks for joining us today on Trumpet Radio Live. And make sure that if you missed any of the programming today on KPCG, you go back to kpcg.fm and you can check out the archived versions of the programs as well. That'll do it for us on this Tuesday edition. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Tuesday. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.